When I study the saints and when I look at my own story, I'm fueled by equal parts pain and joy, as most artists are. And I wanted to reflect that in the work. This is how people connect with the saints, as you see how your story fit with theirs, right? And all of them have these, what I call dark and dirty bits.
Welcome to Created Creative. I'm Dawn.
And I'm Ruth.
And I'm balancing a toddler. I'm just going to grab a bottle.
Now I get to see your kitchen. Oh, this is nice. White kitchen.
Yeah.
I like it.
I think teeth are just a problem. Oh. We're going to try chewing on a bottle.
Yeah.
She's not even so much into it having milk. She just wants to chew.
Oh, my gosh. Have you kept pacifiers away from her?
It's so funny. People have such strong feelings about pacifiers.
So she doesn't use one?
She doesn't.
Well, that is good because we learned the hard way.
That it's hard to end it.
It's hard to end it.
Yeah.
And Owen had so much orthodonture work that he needed done
because he had it all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure of it.
Oh, okay. Well, we're doing well on that.
Yeah.
She hasn't ruined any teeth yet because they're not there. Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yep. And it was funny because Jesse never wanted it.
Like
one time I saw him try it because Owen would literally always want it in his mouth. And so Jesse picked one up and put it in his mouth and they just spit it out.
So it just wasn't his thing. Yeah.
It wasn't his deal. Yeah. Owen, he was like his crack. He was done.
All day long, it's in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard of that.
So.
Okay. We're this far. I think we're going to make it without a pacifier.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Ooh, I hope we get a bunch of comments about pacifiers now. Everyone, let us know what you think about pacifiers.
I know I texted you about this, but just how many people like talking about egg bake.
Oh, we had our most comments ever on the egg bake.
Yeah.
And then I made egg bake for my dinner party on Tuesday.
I actually just made one today. The egg bake saga continues.
And they knew because I have made egg bake in the past.
Yeah.
But not because they grew up with it.
Right. Yeah. And my boys, they really like it. And they are off of school today. So I made one this morning. Oh. And it's fun because you can just slightly tweak the recipe with what you have in the house.
Mm-hmm. I actually used toddler milk because I didn't have regular adult milk.
Uh-huh.
I mean, yeah. It's not like formula. It's just whole milk with probiotics or something in it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure it's good.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
It's really good.
We all, I'm sure, grew extra brain cells and strong bones and teeth.
Yeah. If I have leftover sour cream I'm trying to use up, I'll just toss it in something.
I'm a newer cook, so I'm learning lots of dairy can replace other dairies in recipes. Mm-hmm. This is news to me.
Yeah. Do you enjoy cooking now that you're doing it a little more?
It's getting better, but I'm glad I wasn't in charge of Easter or something marquee. I'm not ready for those high-level meals yet. Happy Easter.
Here we are. We made it through Easter. Yay.
So it was perfect to have this guest right after Easter. It tied in really well.
Kristen, she recently made something for the Consecrates. It's these red eggs. And it's an old story that goes along with it about Mary Magdalene and these white eggs that turned red.
Okay.
And I don't have it all memorized.
Beautiful. She says it in the episode. She'll tell.
She does.
Everybody gets to hear the story.
Yes. So I thought that it would be a perfect time to have her because she just created something again for Consecrate recently. Very gifted artist.
Wow. Well, enjoy Kristen.
Yeah.
Thank you all so much.
I'm so glad that you could take time to talk with us.
Oh, thanks for inviting me. Yeah, I have recently diagnosed with lupus. So I've just had all these doctor's appointments and like new medicines and new symptoms. So every week there's 3 to 5 medical things going on.
Yay, someone can figure this out. Somebody knows.
Yes. I have a wonderful doctor. Super grateful for that. But I haven't been able to paint very much. So the arthritis is so bad and that's affected like everything.
Does painting help your mental health?
It usually does. Zoloft is helping. That's been what's keeping me sane through all this.
Thank you for sharing it.
I'm pretty much an open book.
So yeah. I know you live in Louisiana, right?
I do.
Yeah. Good. I was just there.
Oh, you were? Where did you go?
In New Orleans, where tourists go for the CA Youth and Children Family Ministry Extravaganza.
Oh, okay.
Are you far from there?
I'm about 45 minutes from there. I'm on the opposite side of the lake from New Orleans.
Are you from there originally? Did you grow up in Louisiana? No.
I'm originally from Michigan. But my husband's from here. So we met in Florida when we were in college together in the early 2000s. And then we moved here in 2015.
So Kristen, you and I have had the chance to interact a couple times through, you have created two different things for Consecrate, but there might be some of our listeners who aren't familiar with you. So would you mind just giving us a little introduction for yourself?
Sure. I've been an artist my whole life. I ran a photography business for 17 years. I did portraits and weddings and theater and belly dance and all kinds of things. And then moving to Louisiana, I got back into painting, which is what I did my whole life before photography. And I taught painting, and all of this icon stuff started at the very beginning of the pandemic. And that's been life changing. It totally changed everything. I don't do photography anymore. I've completely retired from that. And this is what I do for a living now.
Tell me what this icon stuff means.
How it all started is I studied art history when I was in art school. And I'm like a semester short of an art history degree, but I was always interested in traditional iconography. I just always thought it was fascinating. But there was something that I didn't connect with. And when I was in Florida 4 years ago, I was in St. Augustine. And if you've ever been there, then you probably know that there's a huge Greek Orthodox church there, and they had a little icon shop. So I told my husband, you can go do whatever. This is where I'm. And I went to a used bookstore and bought some books on saints. And then I went to the icon shop and spent like 3 hours there in the little Orthodox church and everything. And I thought, maybe I want to do my own version of an icon. And I came home and then everything shuts down. And I was like, people need art right now. This is what artists do, is when the world is not knowing what to do, artists step in. Right. So my first icon was Jesus of the Sacred Heart, and I painted it live on Facebook on March 16th. It was literally like the day after it shut down. And from that point forward, I've had a running commission list, and the commission list is about a year and a half long. It's going to be longer just because of my medical things going on, but I've done 64 icons in 4 years. And I study them extensively. I didn't at first, like I just would read a little bit about them, but I'm also a writer. So it's developed in how I study and my process has really developed too. So now I spend, depending on how much information there is about them, I'll spend anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks just studying them before I even feel like I can represent them in an image in a way that tells their story properly.
You really know your stuff. So it was really cool. The first thing that Kristen made for Consecrate was she shared the icon. It was on a card, I think, of St. Lucy, right?
Yeah.
And to talk a little bit about the image you created, because it's not how people think.
No. With the lights on her head.
Yeah. That's all
I know. Tell me more.
When I study the saints and when I look at my own story, I'm fueled by equal parts pain and joy. And as most artists are. And I wanted to reflect that in the work, because the more I studied these saints, the more they became my friends. And I felt like I knew their stories and they knew mine. And this is how people connect with the saints, as you see how your story fits with theirs, right? And all of them have these, what I call dark and dirty bits. And so many traditional icons don't show that. Some do, like Middle Ages was a pretty dark period focused on death. So there was a lot of like skulls and blood and things like that, but not like this. So I'm not afraid to tell the dark parts of their story. And Lucy, her eyes were gouged out. So she's wearing a bandage with blood stained on it. And she's got a knife in her neck because she was cut in the throat. And I have some other ones that are pretty dark leaning too. Rose of Lima and Rita of Tasha. And they have skulls and different things in them. And people ask me all the time about it. And then when I tell them their story, and I think what people have a problem with when they see that dark part, it has nothing to do with me or the artwork. It has everything to do with them looking inside themselves and seeing those dark parts, and they don't want to see that. So I've learned that it's not about me, but it's about them having a hard time reconciling with a lot of that. It's really become therapy in a lot of ways, not just for me, but for the people that I'm doing the original icons for. They each have a story to tell of why they're close to that saint and what that means to them. And this process is different than doing just a regular commission of the landscape or building or something like that. This is personal. So it's not like I send a sketch and get an approval. This is like a process, and then they see it as it goes along and they get the finished piece.
Did the part you did of your art history major tell you, or is this in that last semester?
Yeah.
What makes an icon? Like, I can picture them. I've seen them in museums, but what are the criteria?
I get this a lot when I teach classes and workshops and stuff. People ask me this all the time. In the beginning, I didn't call them icons because I had in my head that, oh, this is just religious art. And then it took a priest that I was working for. He said to me, no, icons are about intent. These are icons. And that totally changed my perspective. Because most people will tell you icons have a very specific list of rules. And I've never been good about rules.
Okay.
I don't like to do what everybody else does. And so I had to grow into accepting that these are icons. It's hard for me to give myself credit. That's something a lot of people have a hard time doing. Like, you don't want to talk yourself up or make something bigger than what it is. But it totally changed my perspective. And then I realized what it was about traditional icons that felt so distant for me. And it's that in those rules, that traditional icons, as we all know them, the Greek Orthodox, the Russian Orthodox, things like that, it's never about the artist. And all of them are the same. And that's because they're traced. If you have an original icon of St. John, that's been traced and repainted over generations and generations. And there's a wonderful, rich theology in that. But as an artist, not having my voice heard in the work is what I was missing. So I'm really influenced by Frida Kahlo. She's one of my absolute favorite artists, always has been. And you can't look at a Frida Kahlo painting and not know that it's Frida Kahlo.
Right.
So you look at traditional iconography, you have no idea who painted it.
Old school mass production.
Yeah. And there's so much prayer and intent that goes into it. Like, how can it not be also about the artist? That's how I feel about it. And then there's so many modern iconographers now, like Janet McKenzie and Kelly Lattimore and modern saints and all of them. And we each have such a different style and a different way that we do it, but they reach people in a different way than traditional icons do. They speak to people now.
That room that you're in looks like an awesome room. Do you do some of your creative work there?
I do. It's a huge porch. When the weather is nice, I come out here and paint. Or if I have a lot of like red eggs to paint, to stain and draw, I bring them out here because I can spread out.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So the red eggs, by the time people hear this, all the red eggs will be out. She made all these red eggs for the Easter consecrate, and they were so cool. Would you mind telling a little bit about the red eggs and the story behind
them? Sure. I've done two icons of Mary Magdalene, and I do a whole class retreat on Mary Magdalene. I wrote this story that I have the voice actor read and just all kinds of stuff. And I learned most of the icons of Mary Magdalene. She's holding this red egg. I knew it was like a Greek Orthodox tradition, but I looked more into it. And then I had friends that are Greek Orthodox, so I call them up and ask questions. And she told me about the myrrh bearers and like all this other history that was just very put out in lay terms on the internet. I wanted something more personal because that's my style of writing and drawing and everything, and then just really being able to share that rich story. And anytime I share it, and I've been doing these red eggs for 3 years now, I want to say, and every time people just eat it up, and then it's like you get to celebrate Easter twice because then you recognize Orthodox Easter, and it's very inclusive, and it's just a good story. So like the very short version of the story is that after Jesus was resurrected, I think they say it was like a year later, Mary went to see Tiberius, who was the new governor after Pontius Pilate, and basically hoping that he was a good person. And she had a basket of eggs with her. And she's telling Tiberius about the resurrection. And you can just imagine him sitting there rolling his eyes because he has a woman in front of him telling him the story. And he's like, oh, Jesus resurrected, like those eggs in your basket are red. What do you think happens? The eggs turned red. And then he believed her, obviously. And they carried red eggs with them to tell the resurrection story to other people. And then in the Greek Orthodox tradition, they'll make red eggs the night before Easter. I want to say it's the night before. And then they do what's here in Louisiana, they call it popkin, where they hit their eggs together And when they crack, it symbolizes the cracked tomb. There's just all this rich history and information. I didn't know about any of that stuff because you don't know until you actually talk to someone. And then I don't know if you've heard of Diana Butler Bass.
Oh, yes. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. She's a writer and she has a really well-known sermon about Mary Magdalene.
Yes.
That she did at the Wild Goose Festival 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I got to meet her last year. It was awesome. And so with all of that information, I was able to condense it down and write it in my own words. And that's what I shared with you, Ruth, to share with everybody that gets the red egg.
Thank you for sharing the story behind that, because I thought it was just really cool and really unique. And I know that subscribers are going to be excited. So let's go on. I wanted to ask you, who are some of your favorite creators?
Oh, wow. That's really hard. So are you talking any creators or people who are still alive?
Yeah, it can be dead or alive.
So I love Frida Kahlo, and I'm really influenced by a lot of Mexican art. If you look at my work, you can see it, like the bright and bold colors and things like that. Janet McKenzie, I'm obsessed with her icons. Most of them are women and of color, and they're just absolutely stunning. If you've never seen her work, you definitely need to go check it out. Kelly Lattimore, obviously a lot of people know him. He's very concentrated on social justice. He's the one that did, if you might have seen it, after George Floyd passed away, she did an icon of Jesus and Mary after Jesus came off the cross, kind of like a pietà, and it looks like George Floyd. And someone had asked him, is that Jesus or George Floyd? And he said, yes. And I love that, the social justice aspect to it. I'm trying to think who else I love and am influenced by. Old school artists, I'm really influenced by Frida, but also Vincent Van Gogh and just a lot of art history. You know, Degas, she spent a lot of time in New Orleans, and there's a house there that he had stayed in that his family owned. And I got to spend some time in there, and I already loved his work, but then being someplace where he was really influenced me. Writing wise, I love all kinds of things. Tennessee Williams, again, New Orleans, and I love Margaret Atwood. These are all just influences in my life. Traditional tattoo art is also a huge influence in my work. Yeah, because the outlining and stuff that I do.
To what degree would you say tattoos are the modern world's icons?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I think it comes down to identity and intention. So I have a tattoo and it means something very personal to me. And that's how I feel about tattoos. Like, it has to mean something. A lot of people, they'll just go and have, you know, whatever done. But speaking for the people who get something that it means something to them, that's a living icon.
I think so too. The people I meet with tattoos tend to have deep meaning infused into
it. It tells their story, right? And the whole point of iconography and stained glass windows and all of this art and everything that came from the Middle Ages and before, all of that was set up for people who were illiterate. So you would tell stories visually in the windows and on the icons. And so when you see tattoos on people, it's like a visual history of their story in a way. So I see, like, a lot of the graphics that I do on the icons, it's more than just the portrait. There's the kind of stuff around it, like the St. Lucie one that Ruth has seen. There's all the other things in there, the objects that tell the story. And that's really a tattoo. Yeah, that was a really good question. Thank you.
Yeah. You got to tell us a little bit about the room that you're currently in. But I was also interested, as far as your creative process, do you have certain times of day that you like to create, or do you need it quiet, or do you listen to music?
It depends. Right now, because of all the medical things I have going on, I can only do it in shorter sessions and then whenever I have the energy. But even 6 months ago, I mostly do work at night. I find it quieter and more comforting. The weather's cooler. It's just a more comfortable setting for me. But when the weather is like this, I like to come outside. It also depends on the saint. For instance, when I worked on the icon I did of creation, I had to do that outside. I just had to be in creation to be able to do that. Or if there's a really dark one, like St. Lucie, for instance, I had it really dark in the room that I paint in, but then I just had my lights on around my art desk. So I felt like I was surrounded by darkness, but there's this light where I'm working. It's more than just a lamp. It's the feeling that all of that
provides.
Yeah.
It depends on the saint. It depends on how I'm feeling, what I'm drawn to. Sometimes, like Miriam, I brought up before, I had a dream, like a physical dream, about what the icon would look like. And I woke up in the middle of the night and I had to draw it immediately. Oh. So I didn't forget it. That's happened a couple of times. And I just call that the saints getting loud. Those are just some kind of examples of how they show up in different ways.
And you have pictures of many of your saints on your website, right?
I have all of them.
Wonderful. And then the question that we always ask is, how do you see creativity and your spirituality connect?
That's pretty easy because of the subject matter with the saints. With the studying them so much in advance, I get to know them as friends. It's so much more than just, I'm doing this portrait of somebody that died a long time ago. This is Saint Lucy, and I know her story so well, like I would know a story of a friend that I'm telling someone else about. So spiritually, it's totally changed everything for me going through all of this medical stuff. There's certain saints that sit with me. My most recent saint that I've studied is Padre Pio. And I didn't know anything about Padre, but I'll never forget when I was having this MRI scan done about 2 months ago. And it was for my head and neck. So they had to put your head in this case that locks. So if you're claustrophobic, it's literal torture. And you get slid in and it's really loud and it's like 45 minutes long. And the only thing I had was my Zoloft and closing my eyes and praying. But I've gotten to the point where it's like my prayer life is quiet. And I don't mean that in that I'm not praying. I mean that in that God isn't expecting words from me right now because I just don't have them. I don't have the energy for it. I don't have anything for it, really. It's just been so much on me. But I feel the presence of the saint in that pastoral way. So like when you're in seminary and when you're clergy, you learn about, sometimes you don't say anything, you just sit there and listen. And I feel like because I've gotten to know them so well, certain ones are there with me at certain times when I need them. And that's totally affected my spirit.
Yes.
How I explain that to people is that imagine when you pray alone and of course God hears you, but when you pray with a friend, how does that feel? So praying with the saints is like praying with a friend, and you know each other's stories and you're close and they just sit with you and help you in that way.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's really beautiful. And so, Kristen, I know you've got so many interesting projects that you are working on. And I wanted to ask, because Dawn is a life coach, is there anything that you're thinking about, a project that you're maybe thinking about starting, or a dimension you've been thinking about going toward in your work that maybe you'd like to talk with her about?
I have two things. The first is my husband and I live below the poverty line. And a lot of that is by choice because I would rather work for myself than work for another corporation. And I would rather be poor and happy than have money and be miserable.
Full disclosure, you should know that I see that as a false dichotomy. I don't pair poor with happy and then money with misery. So
exactly. What I'm struggling with now, business-wise, is getting my work seen. Yes, I have a running commission list. Yes, I sell things in my icon shop. Yes, I do classes and workshops and have wonderful interviews with podcasts and things like that. But learning new algorithms and getting your social media posts seen, if I need more orders to sustain our life. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do.
So, yeah.
There's a year and a half wait list.
Yes.
So what are we trying to do?
So I have an online icon shop. So when I do an icon, I scan them, clean them up, and then I do reprints. I do handmade like wood plaques, and then I do matted prints and prayer candles and all kinds of things. And that is the general source of money to pay bills. So I'm not looking to get rich. That's not my ultimate goal or anything. I just need to sustain things better. But yeah, it's like getting my work seen. I see other modern iconographers and they all have, you know, thousands of followers. I'm talking like 10K plus, and I have 1,500. Now that 1,500, they're like solid. I have many regular customers and I'm so appreciative of that, but I need it to be seen more. Do you know what I mean?
Yep. And
a very engaged 1500 is better than 10,000 passive follow.
Oh, for sure.
So I just want to say A plus to what's already happening.
For sure. Yeah.
Are you wanting specifically how to have more gram followers, or are you wanting to just make sure more people buy the icon?
Yes.
I
know I do a good job of engaging people. When I talk about the saints, they get interested. And we've discovered that anytime that I get to speak in front of a group and then sell my icons, like in person, mm-hmm. I do really well. Or if I'm at a church or a religious function, I do really well. But if I were to go to an art market in New Orleans and people don't know me or what I do, I don't do that anymore because I just don't sell anything. I need to be speaking in front of people.
Also, so, an art market is not your people. They're at Wild Goose.
No, it's not. Wild Goose, I did really well. Next week, I'm speaking for an organization. I'm doing a lecture and they already have 150 people signed up. And then I'm selling my icons. So I know that I'll be able to sell stuff. I'm talking about Saints of New Orleans, not the football one.
Oh,
the
holy one.
Yeah, that I've done a lot of studying and work with that. So I know I do really well with that, but I don't know. I feel like I'm missing something. Like I could be getting so much more and I don't know what I'm missing.
So when you speak about the Saints of New Orleans, is it being recorded?
Yes, actually they had a couple of people online because they do paid advertising and stuff. It's a big organization.
Are you allowed to get the recording?
I will ask.
It sounds like you speaking really gets you traction. So every time you speak anywhere, before you sign any contracts, you make sure it's going to be photographed and also that you can have a recording.
That's a good, yeah.
And I just go to random tiny churches sometimes and I'm like, you need to have somebody there who's dedicated to filming and taking photos.
Okay.
And it's some high school kid who's thrilled. So that recording is going to be 30 Instagram posts. Yeah. And you're going to use all the hashtags about specifically New Orleans. Find out if you can talk to the people going to the National Youth Gathering.
What's the National Youth Gathering?
The Lutheran Church is sending 30,000 teenagers to New Orleans this summer.
Oh, wow.
Somehow you can either find out how to be a vendor there or talk to some youth groups before they go. They do a thing similar to the Taylor Swift concerts where they trade trinkets with other youth groups.
Like friendship bracelet.
Exactly. So what if some churches learned about some New Orleans icons and the leader buys five, then copies them for the kids and you have some sort of commission?
I do like wallet size prints.
Yes, that's exactly it. So then a couple youth groups can be using your icons as the thing they pass out.
That's a good idea. And that's the other thing too, is like branching out then more than just the Episcopal Church, because that's And like Wild Goose was a little bit of everything, and that was great. And the lecture I'm doing next week is not religious affiliated. It's for a group called Save Our Cemeteries. You know, the cemeteries are so important here in New Orleans, and they use that money to take care of the graves and things like that. So this is my first time doing this in a non-religious format.
You make sure you come out of there with five more leads on speaking locally.
Yeah, that's the plan.
I'm not against Instagram, but it sounds like you're doing marginally okay. And really blaming the algorithm is not your brilliance. Your brilliance is speaking about it, it sounds like.
Yeah, it is. And sometimes I just need to hear that, like somebody to say it to me.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just thinking about how some of my favorite TikToks are when people, they've done a presentation and they'll just carve it up, like you said, Dawn, into little pieces. And then you get this snippet of it on TikTok and then you want to go find the whole thing because it's so cool.
Yeah, that's good advice. I appreciate that so much.
So I think you could find 15 speaking gigs by the end of next month.
Wow. You really think so, huh?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you won't have done them. Just book them, not do them.
And I've done it. I feel like I'm being called more to the speaking stuff since I can't.
Okay. You know what else? Kristen, I'm wondering if you could speak at a tattoo convention.
Oh, cool.
Man, I
just feel like there's lots of places.
Yeah, they have those in New Orleans. I'm just very careful about bringing religion into things, too. It's be inclusive of everybody. But that is also something I'm super proud of, is that I have a lot of friends of every spectrum of belief and non-belief. I have quite a few friends that are atheist and agnostic, mostly from the gay community for obvious reason. And they always appreciate the way that I tell the stories of the saints, because I tell the truth. And I tell them in a way that is inclusive of everyone.
So you just write the
workshop description at the tattoo convention in such a way that people will know that about you.
Yeah.
So what's the first step? Is it calling ahead to the cemetery to make sure you can get this recording?
I know the president of the organization, so I really just need to ask her.
Great. And if she says it's going to be hard to get it, then your immediate response is, may I please bring someone to record me?
Yeah, and my husband will be with me.
Great. Does it feel like the first step? I just made that up. I don't know your whole world.
That feels right, because I feel like that's what I'm more called to do right now anyway, like I said. Mm-hmm. And I just need to be better at saying what I want and claiming it, like, yep, instead of being so passive. So that is one of my hiccups.
Also, this recording then is going to get sent to potential other people who may want to hire you to talk.
And I appreciate that too. Yeah, I did 2 podcasts in the last month and a half as well. And that got new people seeing my work and everything too.
And here we are.
And exactly. And I've loved working with Ruth at Consecrate, and I see people ordering Consecrate and everything. And I'm like, ooh, yeah. Wait till you see your Easter bot.
Yep, they're going to love it.
You can make a lot of money doing this and choose to live below the poverty line just because you gave a lot of money away, not because it's not available to you. That's my last thing.
Amen to that. Yes.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want the big house and all of that. I want to live modestly, but I also want to be able to just afford to do things. Paying for just living, for food and credit card. Yeah. But yes, to be able to just go out to eat once in a while. I have huge vacations I want to go on because I want to go visit all the places these saints are from.
If you are working toward a specific vacation,
I don't know you that well, but lots of people would get motivated to start seeking out these speaking gigs because you have a very specific goal.
Yeah. And I wouldn't even call it a vacation unless you call it like a spiritual vacation. I call it more of a pilgrimage. But okay. Yeah.
But you're allowed to also have vacations.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and non-working ones, because when I did photography, that's all I did. If we went somewhere, it's because I got paid to go there and I had to work. It's like we got to do fun things, but it wasn't totally removed from everything.
Yeah.
Thank you for engaging in my worldview. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. I need to be able to talk about it with people who understand and get feedback.
Chris, we so appreciate you taking time to talk with us today, and I love the work that you're doing, and it makes me happy that you exist and that you're out there making beautiful things and sharing your wisdom.
So good to meet you. Nice to meet you too, and thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us for Created Creative.
We're so glad that you could join us today, and please remember to like and follow and share us with all of your friends.
And follow us on social media.
And go create something.
Go create something.